Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm joined by Joel Richard Paul, whose new book, Without Precedent, Chief Justice John Marshall and His Times, is now available wherever your fine books are sold. Joel, this book is so encompassing, and so it's kind of hard to shrink it down, but can you start out with, you make the argument that Chief Justice John Marshall is one of the most important, if not the most important, founding father. I've never heard that before anywhere. What's your argument?
Yes, well, John Marshall did more that had an enduring impact on what our country's become than any of the other founding fathers. He was the guy who really established the principle that the Supreme Court has the authority to not only strike down laws of Congress, but also to review actions of the executive branch. He established the principles that international law are part of our law. He established the basic foundations of Indian law. He really created the basic protections we have for property rights, for private corporations and private colleges, and contract rights. And he had just an enormous impact as well on the country's diplomacy, on the establishment of the new government. He was the guy who designed and oversaw the supervision of the final completion of the District of Columbia, so all of the official buildings. So he had an enormous impact on the country, and it's often overlooked because of his one or two most famous decisions on the Supreme Court. But in his 34 years on the court, he decided over 1,100 cases, and nearly all of them were unanimous.
You know, something I learned that I didn't know a lot about his history, he was so important in ratifying the Constitution because but for him, Virginia probably would not have voted to ratify, right?
That's correct. He was the critical guy in Virginia. James Madison, of course, was a very important figure as well in Virginia, but James Madison was a bit of a nerd. He wasn't really a very persuasive guy with the individual delegates. It was John Marshall who took each delegate out for drinks and schmoozed them and persuaded them that really the Constitution had to be ratified. And the Constitution passed in Virginia by a slim margin, just 10 votes. Without Virginia, we would not have had a nation.
The founders, the founding fathers, other than Chief Justice Marshall, what was their view of what the Supreme Court should be at the time of the Constitution?
The founders, other than John Marshall,
right,
had a much more sort of local view, most of them. They tended to think about the importance of states' rights and local government. They wanted a weak national government. John Marshall saw the need to have a strong national government defend our borders, and to help to build up commerce and industry and knit the country closer together through infrastructure.
At the time, the Supreme Court Chief Justice job wasn't highly sought after and didn't pay very well, right?
That's correct. It was not a job that most people wanted. You had to ride circuit, which meant literally that the justices had to get on a horse and ride around from county to county, hearing cases often in taverns and spend many, many days away from their homes. It was not a fun job, but John Marshall took it on out of loyalty to the president and out of a commitment to the principles of federalism.
And he was a Federalist himself, but what did that mean at the time? There wasn't a Federalist Party, right?
Well, at the time, but by 1800, there was a Federalist Party at the time that he actually got onto the court. He was really the leader of the Federalist Party in Virginia and probably one of the most important leaders of the Federalist Party in Congress when he was briefly in Congress. He was committed to the idea of a strong national government. Also tended to be anti-slavery. So for a Virginian, that was an unusual position to take. But Marshall was generally opposed to slavery. He believed in weaker states' rights, and he hoped that someday a strong federal government would be able to regulate slavery out of existence.
And of course, you know, we know this guy for authoring Marbury versus Madison to establish the idea of judicial review. He came from such humble beginnings, a huge family crammed into a small house, right?
Right. He had 15 brothers and sisters. They shared two rooms and a log cabin on the frontier of Virginia. He had no formal schooling apart from a single year of grammar school. And yet this man rose to become not just Chief Justice. He was a prominent leader of the Federalist Party in Virginia. He was a famous diplomat who negotiated what was known as the XYZ Affair with France. He became Secretary of State at a point in time when the Secretary of State was really sort of more like a prime minister. He basically ran virtually every department of government other than the War Department. And as I said, he oversaw the completion of the nation's capital. So he had just an enormous impact for six decades in American history.
His wife, Polly, is an interesting character, and he met her when she was so young. But what impact did Polly have on Chief Justice Marshall's life?
It's a wonderful love story. He met Polly when she was 13 years old and fell instantly in love with her and decided he was going to marry her when she came of age at age 16. He married her. She had 10 children. Although only four of them outlived Marshall. And she had a very fragile constitution and became very ill. She had both physical and mental ailments, and she spent pretty much their entire married life confined to the upstairs bedroom. And he just was totally devoted to her and loved her to the moment of her death, and did everything to try to make her comfortable and happy. And when he was away from her, he wrote these beautiful love letters to her.
And of course, as far as he got in life, his formal education was almost zero, right?
Yes. He had really only one year of grammar school, and he spent 6 weeks attending lectures in law at the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg. And basically, he only did that because Polly, at the time, was living in Williamsburg, and he wanted to be near her. So, as an excuse, he signed up for this law course, and that's how he ended up becoming an attorney, really.
We hear this term strict constructionist today, and everybody always pointed to Justice Anson and Scalia, and that seems to be what the right wants, is strict constructionist. Did that thought or that notion even exist at the time?
No, not at all. In fact, it's kind of ironic because Marshall, as you know, is really sort of a leader of the conservative movement. He was a hero of the conservative movement. Most conservatives today honor and respect Marshall, but he was a progressive conservative. He knew the guys who wrote the Constitution. He participated in the ratification debates. And Marshall understood that the original intention of the framers wasn't to bind the country to their own literal words, but rather to establish a kind of framework. He saw the Constitution as a dynamic instrument, as something that would change over time. He said, most famously, that we must never forget it's a Constitution we're expounding. And what he meant by that was, you don't read a Constitution like you do read a statute, or you read a recipe in a cookbook. You read a Constitution as setting forth goals, principles that are supposed to guide the nation. He made the Constitution a living document.
And when he was appointed to the court, was he respected in his own time?
Yes, he was greatly respected by Federalists. He was very controversial with Jeffersonians. He was Jefferson's second cousin. And the two of them hated each other. Jefferson was the leader of what was then known as the Republican Party, which later became the Democrat Republican Party. And so they were political rivals. Marshall had also married the daughter of the woman who had rejected Jefferson's proposal of marriage, and Jefferson's family essentially lived off of the wealth that should otherwise have gone to Marshall's grandmother. So they had a complicated family relationship as well as a political rivalry. And as a consequence of that, Jefferson really set out to destroy Marshall politically. And when Marshall became Chief Justice, Jefferson really challenged the authority of the court. And much of Marshall's early years on the court were really intended to try to deflect the threat that Jefferson posed to the independence of the judiciary.
All right. The book is Without Precedent, Chief Justice John Marshall and His Times by Joel Richard Paul. We've only scratched the surface of it. It's fantastic. Go check it out. Joel, thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thank you so much, Brian. I've enjoyed this.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.